This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We're live today, so you can call in and join the discussion at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. I've got three amazing guests today. One I'm going to tell you about very shortly. Coming up later, Reed Mahalko is going to catch us, played a little phone tag with him because he's traveling today, and then Professor Tracy Baer. So today we're going to talk about various ways in which we can decolonize sex and relationships. We're going to talk about that with a relationship anarchist, a sex educator, and a Native Studies professor. First, I want to define what it means to decolonize sex and relationships. So when we talk about cultural history and also current cultural norms about sex, sexuality, and relationships, it's often from a very particular perspective that is informed by a Western, white, heteronormative narrative. Now, instead of naming that, though, we deem this experience and these experiences as universal, as if they've happened all along to everyone. And we exclude all of these other stories and experiences and communities from the narrative. So whether it's relationship styles and structures or generalizations about sexual identities and practices, the dominant ideas are formed and then disseminated only by dominant groups. And that means they exclude Indigenous folks, communities of color, queer people, disabled people, anyone not in a dominant group. So the idea here is that there's a lot of voices that aren't being heard and a lot of stories that aren't being told, at least on a widespread scale. In an interview, the scholar Zuleika Hepworth-Clark asked this question, which I think is one of the ones we're going to try to grapple with today. Their question is, what does sexual freedom and liberation look like outside of toxic patriarchal structures? So the first person we're going to talk to about this and who will be here for the full hour is Kale Gosin, who loves geeking out about relationships and sexuality. That, along with a deep need to continually be learning new things, led her to create the website relationship-anarchy.com. We're going to find out what that means soon. And she also started a Facebook group, a monthly discussion night in Vancouver, British Columbia. She's also done a bunch of videos on YouTube, and she is the organizer and founder of ConvergeCon, the first conference of its kind on the West Coast of Canada. She is a queer relationship anarchist and spoke about relationship anarchy at Harvard in 2016. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Kale.
Thank you, Tristan. I'm really excited to be here. It's a big deal day for me.
Oh, good. You have an interesting backstory, which itself, I think in telling it, decolonizes sexuality, which is that you became chronically ill in 2014, and that's part of how you got to create ConvergeCon. But I wonder if you might share with me how that impacted your sexuality and your sexual life to be someone living with a chronic illness.
Right. Well, having a chronic illness impacts all areas of your life. For me, in sometimes it was being in bed for months on end and not being able to go out or do anything. So you can imagine that really deprioritizes sex, and it changes your needs around intimacy and what you're looking for, because you're just dealing with this huge thing all the time and a lot of anxiety about it. So I think sort of the connection between getting chronically ill and creating ConvergeCon, it's kind of a story in between there. But really it was about, when you're chronically ill, you're stuck at home, you're bored. I was really bored and I wanted to learn and I wanted to still be using my brain and be able to do something. So how I expressed my sexuality and learning about my sexuality was to just kind of geek out about it. It was to read books, because the chronic illness I had was a headache, but I could still luckily read for like quite a bit of time before I would have to stop. And so I would read, and then I thought, I'm gonna learn about relationship anarchy, because I became a relationship anarchist and I couldn't find a lot of information out there about it. So I thought, I'm gonna teach myself how to build a website so we can gather information about it. And the process was sort of just moving from being sick and being stuck in that and being anxious about that and using sexuality as an anchor to learn and to sort of lift myself out of that a little bit.
You know, it's funny. In all these years, I haven't done a show about relationship anarchy. I've talked a lot about a lot of different kinds of relationships outside monogamy. So it's super bizarre that we haven't gotten to this. But let's start at the beginning and define how you define relationship anarchy.
Sure. It's a philosophy and it's a way of practicing relationships. So some people see it as being under the polyamory umbrella. I don't quite think it fits under there, because I think you could be a relationship anarchist and sexually monogamous. So I don't think it's just a part of polyamory, but it shares a lot of traits with polyamory in that people really focus on consent. They believe love is not a finite resource. You can have multiple relationships at the same time, and you're really focused on building a relationship rather than just sex. Like, it's not about just casual sex, although it could be if you wanted it to be. And then there's a few differences between RA, which is relationship anarchy, and polyamory, which is they really reject creating rules and hierarchies, and they limit expectations on people and how their relationship to develop. So a relationship is really a standalone thing that can develop into whatever it is. It's not dependent on what your other relationships are. So it's not like, I already have a primary, so this is going to be my secondary relationship. Those relationships are independent and they can grow into whatever they're going to be. And the final thing that really is different between RA and poly is they don't differentiate between the romantic, sexual, or platonic relationships. So that means the most important person in your life might not be someone you're having sex with, which, you know, seems like kind of a novel idea to a lot of monogamy and monogamous-centric thinking.
And you said you couldn't find a lot of resources on it, but how did you actually discover it?
I discovered it through someone I was in a relationship with. We'd been in a relationship together for a while that was more hierarchical and had some rules placed on it, and that wasn't really working for us. And they came to me one day and said, hey, have you heard of relationship anarchy? And I kind of just went from there, where we realized all these things just started clicking. Like, this makes so much more sense for us. So let's find anything we can to learn about it.
And why does it work for you better than, say, the rules and structure of polyamory?
I think the thing about the rules, like when I was involved in that relationship and we had a lot of rules and structure, I wasn't the primary person in that relationship. So the rules and structure weren't built to protect me. It was built to protect someone else. And I never got to sit down and be a part of the discussion of these rules that were being imposed on my life and my relationship. So when I heard about relationship anarchy and I thought, wow, our relationship could be its own thing and not be influenced by someone outside of it making rules, that just made so much more sense for me.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there usually is the kind of, you know, normative poly, if there is polynormativity, normative way that people do it is that they sort of sit down with their primary and they negotiate with their primary, and then they kind of present those rules to other partners, right?
As
sometimes open to discussion, but sometimes not.
Yeah, and most of the things you find out there, like when you're reading about polyamory, when you want to learn about it, it's almost always from the point of view of the couple. So being like the outside person or the secondary person, it took a really long time for me to realize, oh, hey, I have rights in this, and I get to come to the discussion and decide what works for me too.
And for those of us who are organized and like organization, it's not really anarchy, right?
It's not really anarchy, no. I mean, when people think of anarchy, they think of chaos and, you know, disorder. But the key things about relationship anarchy, you know, there are a few things that flow from anarchy into relationship anarchy. And one would be it's against authority. So that's saying you're against the authority of someone else making the decisions in your life for you. You get to make your own decisions. And anarchists are against hierarchies. So you know, hierarchy is when one person's in a position of power with subordinates underneath them. So it's against hierarchies and against authority, but it's really also for personal liberty and autonomy and self-governance. And those are really the heart of what makes relationship anarchy work as a philosophy.
Okay. We are coming up on a commercial break. We've got 1 minute. Tell me first briefly how you decided to create ConvergeCon, how this all ties together.
Right. So I'll try to be very concise. I heard about CatalystCon on your show, Sex Out Loud, and it was when I was in sort of an upswing recovery period with my illness, so I was able to travel, and I went to CatalystCon, and I just thought, this is incredible. Why don't we have something like this in Canada? And I kept going back to Catalyst. And every time I would go, I'd get a little more like, this is a thing we need in Canada. This is a thing I should do. And I thought, I can do this. So the last time I went, I got to sit down with Dee Dennis, who's the creator of Catalyst, and chat to her a bit. And she really gave me the confidence, like, yeah, these have to start somewhere and I can start it. So there it is.
That's fantastic. Okay, so we are going to take our first commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about ConvergeCon and this thing that you've created. It's happening April 7th to the 9th, so people can go to convergecon.ca, as in Canada, to check it out and to sign up and to go. And then we have Reid Mihalko on the phone, who's going to join this conversation. He's not a stranger to Sex Out Loud. He's been on several times, and he'll be teaching at ConvergeCon. So stay with us, more with Kale, and we'll get Reid on the phone when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, The Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking today with Kale Gosin, and on the line from a layover at an airport, because he's such a good guy, is Reid Mahalko, who I know you know that name, listeners, because Reid's been on the show a bunch of times. He's a sex and relationship expert who helps adults create more self-esteem, self-confidence, and greater health in relationships and sex lives with an inspiring mix of humor and knowledge. You may have seen him on Oprah's Our America with Lisa Ling on the OWN Network, the Emmy Award-winning talk show Montel, Dr. Phil's The Doctors on CBS, Bravo's Misadvised, and on and on. He's really all over the place in terms of media, and he is constantly on the road doing lots and lots of speaking gigs. So we're lucky to have a little window of time where he found a quiet corner of the airport to talk to us. Hey, Reid.
Hey, everybody. I'm so excited I'm not on a plane right now and that I could actually talk to you all. So, what's up?
We are, too. There's obviously a screaming baby right on cue, right there.
Yep, exactly.
Which is, you know, the nature of traveling. So before the break, we were talking about relationship anarchy, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts on relationship anarchy, Reid, as someone who's done a lot of work around alternative relating styles.
Yeah, well, the Kale actually, I think, might have been the first person I ever heard relationship anarchy as a term from. And then I was like, so tell me everything. And, you know, one of the things I love is that people are trying to create their own languages and terms and definitions so that we can have a better shorthand. You know, for me, I don't identify as a relationship anarchist, mostly because for me, having, you know, been friends with people like Maggie Mayhem and people who consider themselves like anarchists, air quotes, in the way of like, I don't, you know, Kale was like, oh, no, we don't mean burn it all down. And so, you know, since I don't really identify with that term, like, I just point people towards the people who I think are very articulate and can teach well about that term. And I try not to give the Reid Mahalko version of what that should be, because it's not how I identify.
I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because I think we're at a moment kind of right now where burning it all down doesn't always seem like a bad idea, actually. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that we are like at such a crisis point that, and I, for one, like sort of have no faith in like the leadership of our government. So burning it all down actually, and like starting again, sounds kind of good. I mean, I feel like that appeals to me on some level.
I think I got a Valentine's Day card that said, let's burn the patriarchy together. So,
right.
And this is the thing, like, Kale, give me your spin on it too. And they're just like with poly or swinging or monogamy or, you know, anything, like there are people doing things just poorly and sloppily and knowing, you know, the rules and breaking them. And, you know, to me, when I see people using relationship anarchy, what seems like incorrectly is they're basically rewriting their agreements on the fly and then telling people about them afterwards because they're anarchists. And that was never what I got from you, Kale, as to what that term, how that term is applied.
No, definitely. There's a really good quote from Andy Nordgren, who's said to have coined the term in Sweden. And she said, it's not about never committing to anything. It's about designing your own commitments. So it's really about making it what you want, not just letting everything fly.
I think that's a great quote and an interesting way to sort of look also at sex and relationship education kind of in a broader way, Reid, which is that I feel like although sex ed as an industry is fairly young, it's younger and a little bit less developed than other industries, there still have become some norms in it. And how do we as sex educators, and especially as white sex educators, how do we fight against that and challenge these norms that have sort of already been established about who the experts are, what the story is, what the history is. I mean, as a sex educator, do you think about that, how to kind of decolonize your own sex ed practice?
Oh, my goodness. Like, I mean, as like one of, and in our industry, I mean, there are cisgendered men in the sex education world, but, you know, when I came into it, like all my heroes were female identified or trans or, you know, gender non-binary folk. And then I was, you know, I was the 6-foot-tall golden retriever on espresso who just came bounding in being like, hey, everybody. And it was only by the good graces of you and Carol Queen and Nina Hartley, you know, and then, you know, Melena Williams and a whole bunch of people who sat me down and are like, Reed, we really like you, but there's a shit ton of stuff you're not seeing because of your privilege. And that was the beginning of me getting schooled in a really great way. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing was starting to realize that I had a perspective on the world that was wildly thin and very much so inaccurate and at least, at the very least, like really incomplete. And, you know, this has been really a place of passion for me, is like, how can I be a better role model as, you know, the white cisgender guy, and just, you know, make it not scary to confront your male privilege and all these other things if you're a guy who's never gone down the rabbit hole of decolonization. You know, and I'm excited, and at the same time, like, I understand how a lot of male sex educators who are just getting into the industry feel like they're being attacked. So I'm trying to like take them aside when I can and be like, dude, like everything's fine and this is really uncomfortable, but you're actually not really being attacked if you look at it differently. That's also not excusing just crappy behavior, but you know, that white male fragility is something that I had to learn. And so many other male sex educators out there are just starting to tackle that. And it's weird and it's surprising. And there's a whole world out there that we need to get better at as men, and especially as white men, if we want to be in the sex education world.
And Kale, you know, in looking at this lineup that you put together for ConvergeCon, I mean, it's striking to me, first of all, how many First Nations presenters you have at this conference, and just how many people of color, how many queers, how many disabled folks. It feels like you really thought about the lineup here, and the commitment shows, in other words.
Oh, thank you, Tristan. That means a lot to me. I was inspired. You talked about having more people of color on your podcast and working for that. And I tried my hardest. I think I can always do better. And we're going to do it next year, and I'll try to do better next year. But I'm glad you think that.
Because I also like, Reed, this thing that you've said, which is just that I think all, like, as white people, we have to just confront this white fragility thing, like this, like, please don't hurt my feelings. Please don't call me out. Please don't like say it in that tone. All of that shit is just, it's like we have to eradicate that from our whole narrative about ourselves. Mm-hmm. I feel like you have to confront it kind of on a regular basis. Just constantly kind of fight against, like what Kale was saying at the top of the hour, which is like which is hierarchy, right? I mean, this notion that we would try to not have hierarchy in our relationships flies in the face of how our entire culture and certainly how capitalism is set up. I mean, do you see those two things together, Kale, like this sort of capitalist way that the world is set up and how business is set up and how hierarchy works, and that sort of transferring over into our romantic, intimate, even friendship relationships?
Yeah, I think decolonization is the destruction of, you know, autonomy and self-governance is what, sorry, autonomy and self-governance is what decolonization is about, really. That's two keystones of relationship anarchy. So I don't want to claim decolonization as a relationship anarchist thing, because I think it's its own thing. And I don't want to pigeonhole this entire concept as being like just a piece for, you know, like anarchists can take something from decolonization and environmentalists can, and all different people can see things that they find of value in it. But I definitely see correlations between it.
Okay, we've got to take another commercial break. Reed's got to go and get an Us magazine for the next leg of the flight. But I really appreciate you getting on the phone with us. And you can see Reed and an amazing lineup of presenters at ConvergeCon, April 7th to the 9th. Thanks for joining us, Reed.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. And Kale, I'll see you soon. And thank you for all the hard work that you're doing for ConvergeCon.
Oh, thank you, Reed.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone.
Hi. Hey, I want to remind you guys that my amazing sponsor, The Pleasure Chest, wants to help you have the best sex of your life. And you can visit their boutiques in New York, LA, and Chicago, and enjoy their free weekly workshops offered in the Pleasure Ed program. Experience sex ed in a fun, non-judgmental, and supportive environment. Whether you're improving your oral sex skills or learning the proper way to wield a whip, the Pleasure Ed program has classes for all experience levels, orientations, and interests. Not only will you learn new skills to take home, but every attendee of a class enjoys 15% off their purchase. Go to pleasurechest.com for class schedules. And coming up in the near future in Chicago, March 22nd, Sex Magic, and March 25th, the Warm Happy Hour, which you don't want to miss. In LA, March 22nd, Bend Over Buddy with Chelsea and Alex. In New York City, March 22nd, Blowjobs and Beyond with Corinne. And March 23rd, another Warm Happy Hour, where you can have warm drinks and snacks, and you can learn about this new product called Warm, which is really fantastic, FYI. And since you just had like 20 inches of snow, New York City, who doesn't want to go inside and get warm? Okay, let's take our break and hear from our sponsors. And then coming up next is Tracy Baer, who is a professor at the University of Alberta. And we're going to talk more about this when we get back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey, everyone. It's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We've still got Kale Gossin with us, and we're talking about this really extraordinary event that she's put together that's happening in April called ConvergeCon. You can check it out at convergecon.ca. And our next guest is another presenter from that event. Let me tell you about her. Tracy Baer is a Tracy yeah. Baer. Tracy Baer is a Nehiyau Isqueo. Nehiyau Isqueo, Cree mm-hmm. woman. From Montreal Lake First Nation in northern Saskatchewan. She has a PhD in English and Film Studies and is assistant professor at University of Alberta in Native Studies and the Department of Women Gender Studies. Her thesis explores how Indigenous articulations of sensuality, sexuality, and gender form erotic expressions and act as decolonizing mechanisms. From art installations to ceremonies, classrooms, and being on the land, she believes education comes in many forms. And her primary objective is to motivate and challenge learners to become critical thinkers and respectful, engaged, and embodied learners. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Tracy.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
So at the top of the show, we talked about this notion of decolonizing sex and relationships. How would you define that? What does that mean to you?
Well, as an Indigenous woman, it's always on the forefront of my mind, especially being in an academic setting. So when we talk about decolonization, there's a lot of different perspectives. You know, you can go political, social, but what I like to think about is gender and sexuality and decolonizing our bodies in a way that we haven't really looked at before. What I mean by that is I look into articulations of sensuality, sexuality, and gender and how these form erotic expressions. And these erotic expressions act as decolonizing mechanisms.
And this is part of your thesis, which was titled Power in My Blood, Corporal Sovereignty Through the Praxis of Indigenous Erotic Analysis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you'll give us just an example of some of these erotic practices and what kind of potential they hold.
Well, when I was looking at some of these sensual stories and visual art, I kind of started to see themes around it, especially as articulated by Indigenous authors and artists. And these themes became quite clear as I kept looking. So one of them is gender. And in the way Indigenous people have looked at gender prior to a settler's arrival is that gender was sort of on a spectrum. So what I started to see from these works is that they looked at gender in 9, 10, 12 different kinds of ways. So I thought, that's really interesting how gender seems to be on a spectrum. And these days, we do have a lot of amazing people who don't neatly fit into the binary of male and female, that they're on this colorful scale. And so I saw the link between Indigenous people's thoughts about this all across Turtle Island or North America. And then another theme that was really stood out to me was this idea of reimagining. So we'd have these authors and artists reimagining the Indigenous body, reimagining sexuality, and through their stories and through their art, I saw this sort of their ability to redefine Indigenous bodies. As you can imagine, Indigenous bodies have been policed and continue to be policed by Canada's Indian Act. But these authors and artists were disrupting sort of that idea. And so as I delved deeper and deeper into it, I saw these really amazing artists that were putting together, you know, animals and people, two different kinds of people, or, you know, a spectrum of gender within their art, and celebrating that. And so they were really disrupting that heteropatriarchal normative. And I think that was really a big part of my draw to this field.
So the very notion that there are two genders, which is kind of a thing that like everyone kind of takes for granted. Like now we're talking about, oh my God, gender's a spectrum. But there's been this real push to be like, no, there's just two. You're saying that never even existed in Indigenous culture.
No, absolutely not. People weren't defined by that. They were defined how they contributed to their community. And so, for instance, say you had a biological male that was born, they wouldn't put a name that would genderize. And I'm not talking for every single Indigenous culture. I can only speak for Cree and many of the sort of the Plains cultures, Blackfoot and Cherokee and going down into the States. What I'm finding from some of these oral stories and from the knowledge keepers that I'm accessing and some missionaries' diaries and journals, what I'm seeing is that there was sort of this idea that it didn't matter what your gender was. It really mattered what you contributed to the community that you were in. So say you were a biological male, but you had a tendency to like beading or maybe weaving, and you began to get really good at that. Well, whatever you were good at, whatever skills that you had and whatever made you happy as a human being, you would be encouraged to go into that field. Because if that person was happy and that person was utilizing their skills, that would be a benefit for the entire community, correct? So rather than trying to pigeonhole them because of their biological sex, they would actually encourage people to go where they will. So the whole idea would be you wouldn't be judged on who you wanted to be with or what skills you wanted to do, but as long as you were a good, upstanding member, everything was fine. And so in this sort of idea, egalitarianism, we had a lot more freedom. So I see a real regeneration in that in some of our youth that I work with. And it's really impressive to see some of the sort of the hardline traditions that we sort of have right now sort of expanding and opening up to include transgender youth or asexual youth or any people that don't seem to fit that binary. So I think it's a really cool happening.
And you talked about, you mentioned oral histories. I'm wondering about also what we think of as history itself, not only what it is, which at least in America, we've rewritten it entirely and propagated it to be like totally false. But then also how it's presented and who sort of has the authority to speak about history and who gets to sort of set what history is and what it isn't. And I'm wondering if there are different traditions also in Indigenous cultures around that.
So I think that's a two-part question. And the first part, I would say that your nation is not the only one that has sort of rewritten history. It's an often quoted line that history is written by the winners, quote. So, you know, Canada is just the same way. In 2007, our then Prime Minister said there's no history of colonialism in Canada, right after, a year after he did an apology for the residential school. So we're seeing history being written day by day, as I imagine you understand what that is about. But so when we see history written by the winners, what happens when we have an age of reconciliation? What happens when we have an age of decolonization? We have Indigenous people who are writers, lawyers, doctors, you know, people with PhDs in English Lit who are making their voices heard. And I think it's it's filling a huge gap that has been there. And so what I see happening with Indigenous erotica, at least for my class, I teach a class in Indigenous erotica, and half my students are non-Indigenous, half of them are. And so there's always a waiting list. So I think, I don't know, I feel like Indigenous erotica is kind of a hook to get people in. But we talk about some of the hard stuff too. And so I think we see a real need and a growth for talking about this and using certain kinds of language in order to discuss some of the harder topics.
And what is it like for you as someone with your PhD and who's working in the university system and also working in community? I imagine that there has to be some pushback around that, and there has to be some sort of tricky power waters to navigate there.
Oh my gosh, you betcha. that's a big question. I guess what the best thing I can say is that I was raised with very strong Indigenous women. And one of the things that I believe and is that if I'm not making waves or causing trouble, if I'm not getting into trouble, then I'm not doing my job. I feel this topic can be very touchy in many Indigenous communities where there has been a lot of history of sexual abuse, sexual violence, you know, through intergenerational trauma from residential schools. And so there's a lot of healing to be done, but there still is this silence almost in communities. And so, you know, we have this upstart who, I'm in my happy little ivory tower, so to speak, at the university and surrounded by academics who are very accepting. But what happens when I go out of that sort of arena? There is pushback. And I say a lot of times what I have to say about that is that, you know, we have a high instance of STIs, unwanted pregnancies, HIV, AIDS in our communities and urban centers as well. I said, our people are doing this. They're having sex. There is nothing wrong with talking about sex if we're having sex. So we may as well talk about it in a good and healthy way. And which is, that's when the Indigenous erotic is really helpful, because it often celebrates just the joy and sensuality of sexuality and gender. And so art is something most people can relate to. So it's a really good fish hook, I guess, to begin to talk about these issues. And so that's where I delve into.
Okay, we've got to take another commercial break. I haven't forgotten about you, Kale. I'm just totally mesmerized by Tracy. Sorry. Okay, good. Okay, good. So let's take another commercial break. I want to continue talking about this more with Kale and Tracy when we return.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking with Kale Gossin, the creator of ConvergeCon, which you can find out about at convergecon.ca. It's happening April 7th to the 9th in Canada. It's just a few weeks away, and you can still get in on it and register for it. And one of the speakers who'll be featured there is Professor Tracy Baer from the University of Alberta. Tracy, I'm struck by this thing that you said about kind of the silence around sexuality in Indigenous communities. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you attribute that to. I mean, has that been sort of the standard all along, or is that white people kind of imposing their puritanical ideas about how we talk about sexuality or don't talk about it on Native people?
Yeah, well, we've got to look back a little bit in history and look at sort of the forces that were at work at the time. So I can't say that there was this pure, amazing, you know, I guess to use a biblical term, Garden of Eden prior to settler arrival. There were issues and things. But for the most part, Indigenous people did have a wider, more freer look at what sexuality and sex was. You got to understand that many people had larger extended families living together under one roof. It wasn't sort of the, you know, the heteropatriarchal monogamous marriage we see today. They had large families, extended kinship. So sex was everywhere. You saw it, you talked about it, you celebrated it, you laughed about it, teased about it. So as people, missionaries and explorers came over, they were quite shocked at the liberation that especially the Indigenous women had, the ability to choose your partners, more than one partner, the ability to use your body as you want. So say you wanted to do some trading, it was socially acceptable to, you had corporal sovereignty. You were able to use your body in any which way that you wanted to. And so when explorers came over here, they were surprised to see women, first of all, being able to have that freedom, and then, second of all, to actually be in leadership circles. At this point in time, 1400s, 1500s, you imagine, women weren't even considered persons to European people. So when you see Indigenous women sitting in a leadership circle, that was quite shocking to them, never mind their sexual values. And so as more and more Europeans came over and then residential school happened, there was a certain idea about sex that was steeped in shame and sin. And this was instituted and shown with force within residential school system in Canada. And so when we had that and then we had sexual abuse happen, children taken away for homes, we see this intergenerational learning happening, and they learned how to be parents or not be parents. We learned, you know, to be ashamed of our sexual selves within these institutions. We take that back. Residential schools are no longer around physically, but I think mentally and spiritually they've crippled our idea of a healthy sexuality. And so, of course, it's difficult for people to talk about this. Elders have a great difficulty talking about it. And I have to give them great honor and respect for surviving residential school. So it's a hard push, you know. I want to push for having to be able to have these conversations, but I also need to respect the experiences that they had growing up. So it's kind of a very soft battle that I'm fighting, and I have to always be cognizant of where the privilege that I have as a, you know, highly educated Indigenous hetero woman, I need to understand my privilege. But I also really work hard for youth. And I think when our youth are excluded or kicked out of their communities for being gay, queer, or not fitting the normative, I have a problem with that. So I feel like I'm a warrior, but I have to go slowly, like with Nerf guns, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask you, you know, this study that was just released in the States that probably only looked at white people, I don't know, but probably, that said that half of this new generation who are preteens and teens right now don't identify as heterosexual in a survey. Half of them, picked another choice on the survey, right? So some may say they're queer, some may say they're heteroflexible, some may say they're gay or lesbian, some may say they're bisexual, but half the people did not check heterosexual, which is obviously a huge shift. And I'm wondering if this kind of explosion of sexual and gender fluidity that we're seeing and the related backlash to it is also happening among Native communities for young people specifically.
Yeah, I don't know if I can speak to that. I haven't seen any qualitative research done for Indigenous peoples, but what I can tell you and what I do see is when Indigenous students come to university, they find a greater, not often a safer environment, but a safer environment in a way that they can explore their sexuality and their gender that they weren't able to before. So they are given tools to talk about it. They're given language in order to express it. And they also have some parts of university for Indigenous students can be a safe environment for them in order to explore those types of things. And they get a lot of support, at least from my university. We have LGBTQ centers, we have Indigenous focus centers, and so I think for me, when I see young people coming in, they come out when they come into university, and I find I haven't done any statistical studies on that, but I'm quite surprised. I'm not surprised, but I'm happy about that. Happy that they are finally able to sort of discuss this, but. So I think I see it a little bit, but I have no hard evidence to back that up.
And at the university, you're the academic lead on this massive open online course called Indigenous Canada. Have to wrap up, but I want you to plug this and tell me about it.
It just opened last night. I think we have over 4,000 people registered for it. So it's a massive open online course, also known as a MOOC, and it explores Indigenous histories and contemporary issues in Canada. But what's different about this course is it was entirely written by Indigenous scholars. We accessed elders and knowledge keepers from all across Canada, and we explored the key issues facing Indigenous people today, and we look at from a historical and critical perspective. So we highlighted national and local Indigenous settler relations. It's very basic. It starts from a very basic, even showing where Canada is on a map, and it gets into quite, you know, detailed. There's 12 modules like you can have in a semester. It's free, but if you want a certificate, you can, I think it's $60 Canadian, and we also offer it for credit.
Wow. Okay. How can people find out about that? Do they go to the University of Alberta website?
Yes, it's right on a U of A website. University of Alberta website. And there is a button right on the front page that you can click on.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that. I don't know that we have anything comparable in the U.S. I don't know.
Not yet.
Okay, I want to give one more plug for ConvergeCon. Hey, Cal.
Hey, Tristan.
Thanks for hanging in there. Okay, so this is happening April 7th to 9th in Vancouver. People can still register. Is that right?
Yeah, and we have a registration code for your listeners for $10 off, and it's Tristan.
Oh, I'm a code. I love being a code. Just anytime you're shopping, people, just put my name in, see what happens. Because, like, big things happen in surprising places with the code Tristan. Okay, so, oh my gosh, okay. So how much are they getting off? What are they getting off?
$10 off.
$10 off, great. And so this this has presenters from around the world, and I'm hoping that it's going to have attendees as well from around the world. I would totally jump right on that if I weren't already booked in the States. But people should go to convergecon.ca. You can meet Tracy Baer there. You can meet Reid Mahalko, who was on earlier. And, of course, you can meet Kale, who's the founder and organizer.
Kale, I'm doing a talk on relationship anarchy, too.
And Kale's talking relationship anarchy. So you can find out more about that at relationship-anarchy.com. You can follow Kale on Twitter at Kale is tweeting. Follow the conference at Converge Tweets. You can find Reid at readaboutsex.com and on social media at readaboutsex. You can follow Tracy Baer on Twitter at Sovereign Body. Thanks to both of you so much. And this promises to be a really great event.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tristan.
Hey, tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. Until then, catch me on Twitter at Tristan Taramino, the show on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And coming up in a couple weeks, we are going to have a show devoted entirely to lots of different people reviewing lots of different sex toys. So I just want to tease that for you because it's going to be a really good show. And I'm taping a little segment for it tonight, which involves, well, you listening in as people test sex toys. I think it should be good. So that's all we have this week, and I will talk to you next week.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.